You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
Hello, Dojo Disciples. This is the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast, Denchi Mail Edition, where every other week we supplement our regular episodes with answers to your video game questions and talk about the latest releases of the Famicom Dojo video web series. This week we answer more questions about the upcoming Kickstarter, give some advice on importing PlayStation 1 games, share our feelings about third-party controllers, and read another haiku.
Hello, Chandra.
Hi, Vinkel.
So what's a nice girl like you doing? No, no.
Why? Why are we still on this?
No, nope, still weird.
Yeah.
Hey, male Sean.
Hey, not girl Vink.
So, it's time for another Denchi Mail.
It is.
Wow, it feels like we just did a Denchi Mail.
It does. It's almost as if there's been almost no time in between them.
Indeed, indeed. So, thank you for all those who reacted the way you did to the first one. All right.
All right. I'm sure we have read those reactions already and have internalized them accordingly.
They were awesome.
It's possible we're recording this while we're waiting for the episode in between the two Denchi Mails to be recorded.
Yes, it is possible. But you've already heard that episode and know how wonderful it was, so I think you'll forgive us.
I think so, too.
All right. So, let's get started, then.
Yeah.
Right. This first question comes from Andrew Cousins from Facebook. And he says, the Kickstarter hasn't started yet, right?
Let's see. Carry the one. No. you will not be taken by surprise. We will give every one of our dear listeners, as long as you are listening to us when it comes out, a 1 month warning.
Ooh.
That is a promise. So I am working up to the 1 month warning right now.
Okay, so what you're saying right now is as they hear this, there is at least 1 month.
That's right.
All right. Okay, well, you know what?
It's a lot of work doing a Kickstarter campaign, and I think I know why so many of them fail is because they're not doing what we're trying to do, which isn't to say we'll succeed. It just means that I think the minimum of what we're doing is like required to be successful. Who knows, we'll probably miss other things
because I think if a Kickstarter campaign does fail, apart from how disheartening that would be to us, it makes the likelihood of a second Kickstarter succeeding a lot lower, and if we want this to happen, we need to hit the ground running. So
I feel like this is topical for something else that might be happening right now.
Yeah. I really do feel right now that I appreciate that people keep asking about us, because that gives me hope that when it does launch, people will look to supporting us. But we want to also make sure that the thing you are supporting is worthy of being supported. So we want to make sure that we've got all the groundwork done. I would hate more than anything to disappoint you guys. And that's the problem. Kickstarter can be wonderful. It gets a lot of projects that wouldn't happen otherwise started, but it can also ruin goodwill with a lot of organizations that people really, really like or I guess I mainly support games, but it can also change your opinion about a developer you really respect. Things go badly, and so it's a risky proposition. So we want to make sure that we're going to release it in a way that, when it's done, the worst you can say about us is they sure took their sweet time getting it started.
Right, right. Yeah, I feel like this process is more effort than it would be to release what we actually want to do for the project, but I think it's good for us. I think it's going to be good for what we actually end up doing. Yeah. And because for some people, this might be their first exposure to Famicom Dojo.
Yep.
I want to make sure that we leave a very good impression.
Yeah.
So we will probably be calling on you, dear viewers and listeners, to help us hone our message once it gets to that point. Because we put together a video, like we shared it. Yep. I think it was the last podcast of 2015.
Yeah.
We shared our tease, of like the first 2 minutes of the video as it existed at the time.
Yeah.
And like, I have concerns that even though it's very Famicom Dojo-y, will it snag a Kickstarter audience? So we may have to do some retooling. We're definitely going to make it shorter, but still put up our full version on our YouTube channel. Yeah. But we want to make sure that we, as Fink said, hit the ground running and give the right message. So we will need your support. So we will not, this will not happen stealthily without your knowledge. We will include everyone going into this, because and if we learn nothing really else, Kickstarter is about community for sure.
And we're really going to need your help on this one too. I think we have a fairly, I mean, compared to a lot of Kickstarters, I think we have a very low goal, but I, you know, because we also have a low goal, if we don't get to it, it's really going to be soul crushing. So,
Indeed. I'm very excited, though, because
even if you don't like physical media, please throw us a couple bucks. Just
right. Well, okay, yeah. Let's answer the next question then.
All
so,
right, let's do that. Yep.
Alex the Man.
Ooh.
Alex the Man 45. So.
All right.
Very. I'm sorry about the other 44 that came before you.
They were Alex the Girl.
I mean, that's
Alex the Stapler.
Alex
the concept.
Right. The concept album.
Or maybe, or were you thinking there were 45 mans before him?
I mean, everyone comes from somewhere.
I suppose.
My Kickstarters.
Anyway.
What are the Kickstarter details? Well, there is a page on the Famicom Dojo website. So if you go to famicomdojo.tv/Kickstarter, we will be releasing details to that page slowly as the date approaches.
Yep. And I mean, I guess the main thing is we're not going to talk price right now, but we're working very hard to make it as affordable as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And, depending on what we can get our production costs down to,
yes. But the good news is the longer we wait, the lower those costs are getting.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
We could possibly lower the goal and then just make our original goal like a stretch goal or something.
To tell you the truth, we might actually be able to be lower than we originally anticipated, because now Blu-ray isn't new tech anymore.
Yeah, so for those who don't know already, this is mostly to fund our 16-bit Season 2 content.
Yes.
Onto a Blu-ray/DVD combo unit.
Yes.
We did talk about this last year in a 16-bit Wars Denshi mail. So
we have
a lot more details there if you want to go back. Those details haven't changed.
We will link that episode, and that's still our main idea. Yes.
So something I did want to mention, because I was just updating the story page on the Kickstarter website, that sort of in parallel to how video games are going these days, we understand that not everyone likes or even wants physical media. So we do have tiers for people to support it and still get a lot of the content in a digital format.
Yeah.
We would prefer it, of course, if people would go all the way up to the physical tier, but we realize that's not going to happen for everyone, but every little bit is going to help, and you will get the new stuff. So there is not just the stuff we've released already that you can watch on YouTube now, but there are the videos that we wanted to finish and need to get done as part of this set.
Yep.
So we are looking very, very much forward to that. But there's always some life event in the way. Like, I believe...
Stop having children.
And I am probably going to be moving at some point this year. So the tentative goal is to have something ready for a major holiday.
Yep.
But I cannot promise that. So we will give you an exact due date once the thing actually launches. But
speaking of due dates,
right?
Yeah, Vink's gonna be busy as well from May.
It's Sounds like you already got busy.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
I didn't do it.
I hope not. Anyway, yeah, I've got another future Famicom Dojo fan on the way.
Right? Future Amari Tones fan?
Future Amari Tones fan, future Famicom Dojo fan. Or maybe not. Maybe he'll just be like, I reject what you do, Dad.
It's a he.
It's looking that way.
Oh man.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm all one gender right now in our family here. So I mean, this just means
I'm glad you added at the end in my family. Like, I'm all one gender, and I'm like, okay,
they're all boys. So yep. I mean, I just probably gotta try for that girl still, I guess.
Yep. I know what you mean.
Gotta even it out.
Well, to even it out, you're gonna have to have like at least three more kids.
Okay, fair enough.
Sean, we are never going to get these videos done if you don't stop having kids.
It's true. I'll never go to MAGFest again at this rate.
True, that's true.
Okay, so yeah, we're very excited. We're working very hard towards this right now. So again, 1 month. You will know 1 month before it happens.
All right.
Promise.
Great. You should read the next question.
Okay. On Facebook, Thomas Buster writes, I recently learned about the Sega Sonic Popcorn Shop. Has Vink ever encountered one in his travels?
Okay. Do you know what the Sega Saturn Popcorn Shop is?
I don't know. No.
I know of it. And I've actually been looking for one, but I don't know. Sonic, you know, Sega and Sonic in general are just not as popular as they used to be. But this is basically a vending machine. And I have never, so sorry, Thomas, to tell you, I've never seen one in person. I have seen them on the internet, but I've seen other popcorn shops. I've seen the Hello Kitty popcorn shop, and I think an Anpanman one that did caramel corn. Basically, what it is it's a popcorn popper vending machine. You put in your money, and eventually you're going to get a bag of fresh popcorn that comes out of it. But, of course, while you're waiting for the popcorn to pop, they need to have something going on this screen that they have built into it. And, you know, I think on the Hello Kitty one that I've seen, it shows, like, Hello Kitty making popcorn and stuff like that. So there's screens of what the machine looks like on sonicretro.org. So you can take a look at that, or just type Sega Sonic Popcorn Shop. But what's very interesting is, and I'm sure this is why Thomas, you asked us this, is because the recent development here is someone has bought the PCB and they've dumped it to MAME. So soon everyone's going to be able to experience the joy of 16-bit screen for waiting for popcorn, without the pain of actually receiving popcorn. I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, but like, it is some, you know, it is something video game related that if someone doesn't preserve it, will go away. I'm guessing there's still some of these in use though, because I mean the machine that I saw was probably made in the very early 90s as well. So yeah, I'm sure that there's a few of these out there, but I haven't actually come across one. If anybody knows one in Kyushu and lets me know where it is, I will gladly go there and do an on-the-go video about it.
Ooh, okay.
Yep. All right.
Your turn next.
Oh, my yes, turn. Okay. Yes. Another one from Facebook. David Bailey writes, a few episodes back, Vink mentioned that this is a good time to try importing PlayStation 1 games and systems due to lower prices. How is the PlayStation 2 market? Are PlayStation 2s a better option because of their backwards compatibility, or would you still recommend sticking with the PlayStation 1 right now? If the PlayStation 2 market is viable, do you have any suggested games to import? That's an awesome question, David. I really like that question. Let me answer it in parts. I'd say the PlayStation 2 market is very viable right now as well, and cheap. You can get a lot of PlayStation 2 games very cheap. I was at a book off the other day, And I picked up like about 10 or 12 PlayStation 2 games for 500 yen each, and some good titles too, some very fun games. Some of them can be found even lower than that. But the reason I said the PlayStation 1 is because I think it's on the verge, on the cusp of becoming more expensive, if that makes sense. Like, it's so low right now, but it's starting. People are starting to want to collect that. It's starting to become collectible. And I think that if you have the choice right now, PlayStation 1 games are the ones that are you're more pressed for time to start building a collection before they start disappearing. PlayStation 2 is going to be around for a little bit longer because people still use the systems. Also, a PlayStation 1 you can get in Japan for under $20, whereas a PlayStation 2 is going to cost you about $100 plus shipping, depending on the model. Some are cheaper, some are more expensive. But like, if you're planning to get into PlayStation 2 import collecting anyway, yeah, go ahead, get the dual unit, because then you can play both. There's very few games that PlayStation 1 games that won't play on a PlayStation 2. So I think that's a totally legitimate way to go. For recommendations, oh my gosh, any of the Simple series are really hilarious. I was playing one pretty recently called Zombie versus Ambulance.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, you just drive an ambulance around and squish all the zombies. What's great about these games is they came out as like low budget titles, and it shows. If you like watching like straight to video, you know, B movies, this is the type of thing. Some of them have become serious after that. Earth Defense Force got actual full titles, and One Chambara, you remember that game, Sean?
Yeah,
right?
In fact, I'll tell my story. And then
go ahead
after you're done. Oh, okay. Now?
Yeah, tell it now.
Okay, I got myself a Japanese PS2 when I visited you for the first time in your new
yes.
hometown in 2006.
Yes.
And purchased one at the eponymous Famicom Dojo
yes,
store.
Yeah.
And Hiro was so pleased.
Yes, he was.
Like, you know, he was already giving me some pretty good deals on like the retro stuff I wanted to buy, but he just like seemed floored that I would spend any money on a PS2.
He always seems genuinely shocked when anybody wants to buy anything.
So I had gotten this because I believe I had purchased. Yeah, I must have. When I lived in Japan in 2003, I had picked up a few PS2 games and DVDs, like, you know, Region 2 ones. So I wanted a PS2 that I could play them on.
Yeah, of course.
So I had like an Tenchimuya one and like an Ava one, but I also got that Transformers game that Takara made.
Oh yeah.
The one that's like what's that genre called? The like the one that like Hyrule Warriors is.
Oh, the Musou type.
Yeah,
type.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So because
hack and slash.
Because and this led to the desire to make an episode of Famicom Dojo that's never come to light, dealing with the history of Transformers video games.
That was supposed to be episode 5 of season 1.
Yeah. Oh man. it was actually supposed to be
how many years ago?
Episode 3, because episode
You're
3
right.
you see part of episode 2.
You're right.
Oh man. Yeah, so like we kept pushing it back and pushing it back, and then what happened in the interim was that other Transformers games got released and they weren't half bad. So that kind of increased the scope, and then more games got released.
And then other shows did Transformer games
yes.
too.
Yes.
So I just
That's all that happened, but I have them all. Like, I have all those games, and if we can bring a unique bench to those, we will do it. But yeah, so in 2007, when we went to our first Tokyo Game Show, that's when I picked up the One Chambara, One Champon, One whatever. I picked up like two of those
games. Yeah,
And
I remember we were looking from shop to shop to find them. Yeah.
Because the Wii version was at the show, which is what.
Yeah, we played it. It was fun.
Right? And I have it.
Yeah. Yeah, I bought it.
And I can't play it. Version. Hashtag Unreal Engine Unlocking.
Wait. But it got released in America.
Oh, did it? I guess I could find it then.
Yeah, you should, actually. Because I... You see, I'm missing out on the story.
Of course. One of those Tokyo Game Show videos from 2007 on the Famicom Dojo Season 1 disc.
Yes.
By the way, which you could buy, or you could wait for the Kickstarter.
Wait for the Kickstarter. I mean, if you buy one right now and tell us that, and when we have the Kickstarter, if you tell us that you already have a copy of the DVD, but you've pledged for a tier that has it, we'll send you something else.
Well, wait. Don't promise that, because we've already set up the Kickstarter for people who've bought the first season.
Never mind.
So they will have another option.
Yes. Oh, okay. delete that part. Okay. Say it again. Okay.
Okay. Which part?
Okay, I'll start with. Yeah. Don't buy it, because the Kickstarter is coming up.
Yep. This is wonderful marketing. Or you could buy it, because the Kickstarter is set up in a way that, at least for the lower tier, well, I guess for any tier really, if you have the season 1 DVD already, we have an alternate item for you.
What is it?
Anyone can get it. You just have to pledge high enough or forego the season 1 DVD.
Nice.
But you know,
okay, so there's so what's stopping you?
What is stopping it? Just buy it now.
We
should have a sale or something, like a pre-Kickstarter sale. This is a terrible idea.
We are bad at our job. Okay.
Right? So anyway, I've used, it was a slim PS2. It had, like, you know, the flip top and everything. Oh. And for a while there, I would bring it to conventions as like just a regular DVD player to help me like present stuff. And after a while it got a little loose. So when buying your PS2, please consider these issues, because if the PS2 can't tell if the door is closed or not and won't boot up the game, then you might have a problem, a very expensive problem on your hands.
But anyway, just to get back to answering the question, there's so many very, very good PlayStation 2 games that never got released in the United States that are very playable. I mean, you're dealing with more complex games at this point, so like there's a lot of RPGs, adventure games, visual novels that without speaking Japanese you're going to have a hard time playing. But there's the PlayStation 2 library is just so incredibly vast that there's plenty to love, and right now it's still It's in kind of a weird phase right now, because they only stopped making games for it a few years back. So most game stores, which are not like retro stores, but are, you know, current gen main, still have PlayStation 2 games. So some of them still command a fairly high price. But I think once it gets, you know, put into the realms of retro, in a couple of years it'll be really, really cheap, like PlayStation 1 is right now. But either way, if you know of games you like, pick up a system. I think one of the things is that there's some awesome music and rhythm games, which I probably should have mentioned in a few podcasts ago. But there's a lot to love. I will talk more about recommendations for that later, I guess. But let us know what you're going to do, David. And be happy to recommend some more. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Brady Kachan. Kachan? Kachan? How do you pronounce your name?
I like to call him Kachan.
All right. I mean, this is
if anyone wants to do fan art of this guy. Anyway,
this is Satoshi Matrix, right?
This is Satoshi Matrix.
Yeah. I've got two questions on the same topic. Oh boy, maybe we should split these up.
All right, you read the first one.
All right. What is your favorite third-party controller for any system? Something made by Hori or ASCII, or have you ever Or have you never found a controller you liked more than the OEM offerings? And that's a little bit of PC jargon for you guys there.
Yeah.
and then the second one.
Okay, and the second one are, what are your thoughts on the shift away from wired controllers to battery-guzzling wireless ones? Are we better off wireless, or is there something to be said about a wired controller experience?
You know boy.
I know you've got some thoughts on this, but yes. let's do number one first. No, third-party controllers are the controller that when like someone comes over, that's the one they use. You know what I mean?
Right. You know? Yeah, most of my experience, at least in the retro days, were very negative. Or like those ones that like have the weird like cooling fans and the handles or whatever.
Yeah.
I very rarely had a positive impression of a third party controller.
Okay. I owned a U-Force. Do you know what a U-Force is?
Oh.
It was that one where like you don't have to use your hands. It was like a power glove without the glove.
You mean you don't have to use your hands? I would live in the future.
You know, it wasn't like a baby's toy. It was terrible. It looked like a laptop. You like unfolded and it had like RF sensors or whatever, and they had these two controller handles you could hold that had like little mirrors in them. Just look up U-Force. It was terrible. But what was great about it was it had turbo fire, so it was the only way I could beat the game track and field, because it would turbo fire the buttons really, 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 really fast, and so I'd use that. But then the problem was it was almost unplayable for anything other than button presses. So when it got to an event that actually required me to use movement or motion, I was screwed. Terrible. But I tried so hard to love it. I can think of one.
Sure.
Hori made a controller for the Super Game Boy, which is just this like you've seen this. It's like this. I've got one. It's like this chunky. It's like this chunky brick controller, which really does emulate the experience of like holding a Game Boy. And I really think that's how the game should have been played. They seem to. It's different when you play a Game Boy game using a Super Famicom controller. Let's talk off cast. I'll get you one, Sean.
Oh man, okay. I am excited. I mean this also ties into one other thing you sent me not to.
I should get you that. In fact, I should get you a second one and a Game Link cable.
Oh.
Because right. that's maybe too many spoilers. Okay.
I have two Super Famicoms. So that will work great.
I like that. And actually, I like a lot of the controllers made by Hori. I really like the one that's like a GameCube controller that has no analog.
Oh, the...
doesn't work with a lot of games.
The Super Nintendo style one?
Yeah, the Super Nintendo
That was style. The one I was going to mention that I liked a lot. That was my first, for sure, positive experience with a third-party controller that I had. And that was good for Smash Brothers. No, it wasn't. No, what am I thinking of? Not Smash Brothers. Beautiful Joe was good for.
Oh, I can imagine so.
Soul Calibur 2.
Yeah.
That's what I used that for. So using analog just didn't really do it for me on the consoles, and the button configuration was weird, but I use a kind of claw grip anyway.
Yeah.
Playing that game on consoles, so yeah, that was definitely a positive.
Some of the Sega Saturn ones that I had were pretty good. I have one put out by Sunsoft for the Sega Saturn, which has macros like the ASCII controllers do. You can program the controller, so you can like put in a Hadouken and assign it to one button.
I'm trying to remember if there's any other ones. Oh, last year. So I guess it was technically late 2014.
Yeah.
I bought at least one version of all the different fight pads they released alongside of Smash Brothers for Wii U.
Oh, okay.
And it's probably worth noting again because it's been so long, but PDP. Was the brand that was released in Best Buy. And I didn't realize there was a second brand at the time. So I got that first. I think I got like the Princess Peach controller. Cause it's like, oh, the Mario one's okay. And the Luigi one's okay. You know what? I'm going to get this pink one. And I did. And I don't like it as much as the other offering I did end up picking up, which was a Luigi one done by Hori.
Nice.
So, like, you know, Hori actually got, like, a GameCube mold. So it's basically a GameCube controller, but it's done in, like, a Wii U Pro Controller style.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so good. It feels like it's got the analog shoulder buttons that are just like the original GameCube controller. Well, sorry, no, I'm thinking of... Is that right? Hold on a second.
You gonna go get it? Well, he's gone. I thought of another one I like. The PC Engine, PC Twin Commander. It was put out by Hori. Oh, are you back, Sean?
Sorry, I got confused here. So yeah, it is very much like original GameCube controller. The only differences being the ZL and ZR triggers aren't, you know, the full like whatever like finger conformed.
Yeah,
they do bend kind of like a trigger, like a think kind of like a PS4 trigger controller, but not as much give.
Okay.
So it kind of feels like a GameCube controller still, but it doesn't have like all that space you got to do to push it, because it's still digital, not analog, like the Wii U Wii Classic Controller Pro didn't allow analog on those buttons. But what else does it have? All the Wii buttons. So there's a turbo button. There's like the repeater number of times. Is that per second? I'm not sure. So 20, that's better than 16 shot. And then the regular Wii buttons, like the plus, minus, and home.
Yeah.
It's a really good pad. And I mean, I don't need that because I have enough GameCube controllers, but you know, it's nice.
I thought of another one I like.
Yeah.
It's also by Hori. It's for PC Engine. It's the PC Twin Commander. And what's not, I mean, it's a standard auto fire controller. The buttons feel very much like, you know, original PC Engine controllers. Very nice. It's got turbo fire, but so did the later like first party controllers. But what's really nice about it is it has a little box on the end of the cable that when you plug it in, you can plug a second controller into it.
Oh.
So it's
nice.
Its own multi-tap, kinda, but only one, but like it allows two player really, really easily.
Kind of like the CDI? 3DO.
3DO. 3DO. But, but the 3DO one was weird because you plug the other controllers into like the top of the controller.
Okay.
So you're daisy chaining this like weird balance thing. But this one, the second port is close to where you plug it into the control, where you plug it into the PC Engine itself, so that you're not adding any additional weight or worrying about disconnecting other people's controllers while you're playing. I think it's a good design.
Speaking of Hori, I did a bunch of research recently and posted it to the Famicom World forums.
Is this so, about your Famicom research?
Yeah. So... A while ago now, Vink sent me a couple of third-party controllers for the Famicom so that we could test like three-player games. And then now that I have a four players adapter made by Hori, that we were able to do four-player games. And so I had a bunch of games that you had sent me, which we had done a video about that's out there now. So the ones all about the Kunio-kun series of games. I finally got to sit down and actually, like, you know, do some research for a video we want to do, or several videos actually. And my findings were very, very interesting. So there's just thinking about how different consoles do multiple control schemes definitely comes into play in this, because there was some ancillary research already done before I got there about how NES versions of these games don't have that capability that the Famicoms did, to either like replace the first player controller with this expansion port, or just use this specific version of the control style at all versus the NES multiplayer options, which ties into the next part of his question.
All right.
And again, for those who forgot already because we talked a lot about the first one, what are your thoughts on the shift away from wired controllers to battery guzzling wireless ones? Are we better off wireless, or is there something to be said about a wired controller experience? And I have so many thoughts and feelings on this. Should I?
Go ahead.
Okay. To tie it back to the first question, one of my worst experiences, I think this was an ASCII controller, was an infrared NES controller that was huge and fat, and I kind of liked the idea at first, but in practical usage, you had to keep that thing lined up just right. So, like, I actually put it on a table.
I had one made by Acclaim.
Maybe it was Acclaim. I don't remember which one it was.
It had this like little sensor thing that you had to like stick on top of your TV or the system. Yeah.
So it was not great, and you know, given the usual thrashing that one does while playing video games, or just the way you want to hold it, naturally, it just wasn't conducive to a great experience. So that was my first time doing wireless, and so it wasn't until the WaveBird came out doing like radio frequencies that I really felt like this had a future, and now everyone's doing it.
Oh yeah.
So thanks, Nintendo.
There's wireless controllers going all the way back. I had ones for PC Engine that were pretty good. But I'm not a good enough video game player where I would notice things like lag. I know a lot of competitive players, they can't use because interference from other signals, but also the lag. But that's never really been a problem for me. What I'm a lot more concerned about is the fact that some of these controllers have rechargeable batteries, which eventually will die out. They eventually won't hold the charge much anymore. Now, for a lot of them, it's not really a problem because the controllers are still around. You can still buy new batteries. You can still get new parts. But as a retro collector, 20 years from now, if I put in my PlayStation 3 controller and I am not able to charge it, I guess that one I could just get a long USB cable,
right?
Couldn't I?
Yeah,
something like that. That's the same that I feel with the Wii U gamepad, but. The worst thing that can break up your gaming experience is when you're playing a game and your controller starts blinking and you don't have any batteries.
Thanks, Wii U. I basically have mine plugged in all the time.
Well, yeah, but and then that's what I do too. When I'm playing PlayStation 2, I'm always charging my controller at the same time. When I'm playing Wii U, I always have. So it makes me go, why do I care if it's wireless if I'm doing this anyway?
Right.
But I don't know. In general, I think wireless technology is the wave of the future. But I hope it will be implemented in a way that makes it future proof.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth, I really like Nintendo's what is it? Controller Pro or something like that. Battery life is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like
yes.
One charge gives you like 20, 30 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, my oldest son and I played a lot of Splatoon, and he calls the Pro controller his controller.
I see.
But if any character comes up blue, and I have to happens to be on the gamepad and I'm using it, he wants to switch. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of the tournament ready stuff, yeah, that was again mentioning Smash Brothers. That is one of the reasons why we have the wired stuff in the adapter for the GameCube controllers for the Wii U. But also I'm sure to address any concerns about the lag, which again I've never really noticed. I mean, I've been playing frequency with a wireless controller for crying out. Or sorry, Amplitude 2 technically, but. My wireless PS4 controller, which I recently had to plug in because of low battery life. But tying this back into retro stuff, though, and the multiplayer thing, there is a video that we will do eventually. I don't know if it'll be before or after our our Kickstarter stuff, but basically we will humorously go over the pitfalls of wired versus wireless technologies. One other thing I do want to mention, though, like the one first party controller I absolutely hate, that might as well be a third party controller for how much I hate it, is the NES Max. I just don't like it. Like, everything about it, I don't like it.
Wait, NES Max. Oh, yeah. That's the one that has the, like, kind of odd shape, right?
Yeah, like, it, instead of having, like, a D-pad, it's got this circle that slides around. And the circle itself doesn't control anything. It's just to, like, help you with a fast movement from, like, left to right and up to down and going to the corners. Because you can like, move your thumb in a circle and it will go to those 8 points the D-pad could do. But I've never found that to be better or even comfortable. And then it's like, it's kind of bowed and it has kind of like nubby little prehensile handles on it.
What's your favorite control pad
For the NES or just for in general
what's your favorite control pad?
Boy, it was the GameCube. I like the Pro Controller a lot, but I think I'm going to have to go with the Xbox 360.
That's a good controller. That's a good controller.
Yeah.
I like that it takes AA batteries and lasts a long time on them.
Yes.
I've had my system for a long time. I've gone through two sets of batteries. I really like, as a control pad, I really like the Neo Geo CD controller with click sticks. I love click sticks. I think it's just a great way to play. I wish it had shoulder buttons, but I mean, the games aren't made for it. But I like that very much. And you know what? I like the Dreamcast controller. I know it gets a lot of flack, but I think it's very comfortable to hold.
Okay, and we have one final question for this episode anyway, by a good friend of the show, Jody.
Ah, Jody Anthony.
And he asks, why do I always see the question call too late? Oh, Jody, I'm sorry. Also, favorite NES Famicom racing game? Mine is for sure is Rad Racer.
Well, Jody, I'd like to answer your question, but it was just too late. So, no.
Apologies to Neil deGrasse Tyson. You ran out of time.
Aw. 3D Hot Rally. You?
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, boy. I think I really liked the RC Pro-Am game back in the day.
Yeah. I wonder if it holds up. I remember I just liked how upgradable the cars were.
I have it. Like, RC Pro-Am 2 is one of those multiplayer games that costs way too much money.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's gone up in price a lot?
It was $60 last I saw. I think it might have gone up more than that.
What? I think I bought my copy on like clearance for like $9 at KB Toys.
Do you still have it?
Probably in my parents' house.
Oh,
probably.
My gosh. Yeah. All right.
I really liked the upgradability of it. I wonder if the game holds up. Did it ever even come out for Famicom? I don't know must have a different name here or something. Who knows? I might have it and just haven't played it yet.
It would.
Pile of shame.
What racing games did I play? Man. Yeah, Rad Racer. Rad Racer was one I liked a lot. I guess Spy Hunters really isn't really a racing game.
Super off-road, but I don't think that's... I mean, it's a racing game, but it's not really that type of racing game. But I loved Super Off-Road.
Right. Yeah, I guess... Yeah, Rad Racer was like the one, right?
Yeah.
Even though it was basically just off-road.
Anyway.
There's like a whole thing about that. I'm sure we'll talk about this in the podcast that already happened.
Excellent.
If you have a question for Famicom Denshi Mail, or just want to share your own future retro or pile of shame, you can contact us on Facebook and Twitter, leave a comment on one of our videos, email us at denshimail or podcast@famicomdojo.tv, or leave a voicemail at 608-492-1923, and we'll play your clip on the show. And now, a haiku by Eric DeJoya.
ゲーム中ファミコン消した悲しみや。
Okay.
Okay.
Well, until next time, the dojo is...
Ah, off, caught off guard. Yeah.
That's right. Caught off guard.
No. All right. Hit me again.
Until next time, the dojo is...
Coming to a Kickstarter near you.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway. Oh.
Famicom Dojo.
The Famicom Dojo video game podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our theme songs, Famicom Thrash and RPG, were written and performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and at amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. Find us at famicomdojo.tv/podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. And, of course, head over to littlepodcast.com to listen to other great shows on the Little Podcast Network.